Well, for one, Vermont has no coastline.
And yet Hurricane Irene is leaving quite a legacy there.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It is the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org for Monday, August 29th.
Coming up, Wall Street reboots after Irene.
The U.S. military goes green.
And later, a Swiss political party with a specific computer beef. All that ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, providing automatic online backup solutions for small businesses. Learn more and receive a free trial at Carbonite.com with code Marketplace.
Wind-whipped and waterlogged East Coast residents are slowly starting their work week today and still counting billions of dollars in damage from Hurricane Irene. Water is rising quickly in rivers throughout the Northeast, and flooding is a major concern, especially in parts of upstate New York and in Vermont.
Now, in Vermont, of course, is where Jane Lindholm from Vermont Public Radio is for us this morning with the latest on the situation there. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Steve.
So tell us exactly what's going on in Vermont at the moment.
Well, if people went to sleep at all last night, they're waking up in many parts of the state to flooded out roads, flooded buildings and businesses. More than 50,000 people are without power this morning, and more than 260 roads have been affected by flooding. Several bridges and roads have just been completely washed out in the state, and one person died when she was swept away by raging rivers. So a lot going on with flooding in the state today.
I know the hurricane hammered a lot of places along the East Coast. Why did Vermont get hit so hard?
The problem here was flooding, not winds, by and large. Some towns saw as much as 7 inches of rain in a short period of time, and that water just had nowhere to go. The ground was saturated, and rivers just couldn't contain the water, Steve.
Was the state prepared, Jane?
By and large, it was. Vermonters were being warned late last week that the storm could pound the state. But, Steve, I don't think anyone was quite prepared for the volume, the sheer volume of water that rushed through the rivers. Utilities had called in backup crews from as far away as Louisiana, Texas, Illinois. But in some cases, Steve, they can't even get to the people who don't have power because the roads are washed out.
What kind of money are we talking about, Jane? I mean, what for insurance and repairs?
Well, it's a little early to say. The governor has said that we're in crisis mode right now. We're not really into assessing the damages. But I can tell you that Vermont experienced some severe flooding earlier this spring. And those damages topped $12 million. And it's safe to say well above that in this case.
All right. Jane Lindholm from Vermont Public Radio. Jane, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Steve.
Well, down I-91, New Yorkers are on the roads and buses and trains again this morning after a weekend shutdown of the mass transit system there. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith is with us this morning from the Brooklyn Bridge as she watches the morning commute. Stacey, good morning. I know the subway opened this morning. What's the commute like?
Well, like you said, the subway is reopened, but it's running on a limited basis. You know, 4 million people commute in on the subway every day, so that is a lot of people trying to work with some limited trains. We have talked to some people who are walking to work this morning because they just didn't want to chance it on the subway. And then, of course, a lot of people commute into New York from places like Connecticut and New Jersey, and a lot of them aren't going to be able to get into work. A lot of those trains are shut down because of mudslides and trees that fell on the tracks and things like that.
Now, Stacey, there wasn't as much damage in New York that some had feared. How are commuters feeling about all the preparation and the hoopla over it?
Well, some people, I think, are glad that we appear to have overprepared. The subways were shut down at noon on Saturday. It felt like a lot of preparation, and it didn't quite feel like it was as bad as we thought. So I think people are grateful, but I also think there was a certain sense of, I won't say disappointment, but of a lot of buildup to not such a bad storm as we'd feared.
And what about people traveling to and from New York, Stacey, airlines and things like that?
Right. Of course, it's the most busy aviation market in the country between Newark and LaGuardia and JFK. Those airports were shut down. They are back up and running, but I'm told with delays. And of course, that's a huge way that a lot of out-of-town travelers get to New York. And of course, a lot of New Yorkers get out of town for business.
Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith joining us from the Brooklyn Bridge. Stacey, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, now let's get some sense of the effect of all of this on the financial system. Our regular Monday guest, Julia Coronado, is actually stuck in the Cleveland airport this morning because of the storm. So we are joined instead by Marketplace's New York Bureau Chief, Heidi Moore. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first of all, New York City is in startup mode right now. Heidi, what's it like out there?
Well, to put it in sort of movie terms, it could have been Waterworld, but now it's sort of like Mad Max. Hmm. There aren't a lot of people out on the streets. A lot of people clearly stayed home. Subways are working, but the trains that serve the bedroom communities to the north and west of the city, Metro North and New Jersey Transit, are out, and people are dealing with flooding, with trees down. Of course, a lot of Wall Street firms started to prepare for that. Last week, Goldman Sachs, for instance, gave its employees vouchers for a car service. Of course, by last night, that car service was completely booked.
So what is the effect then on the financial system this morning, if any?
Well, it's been a huge lucky break for everybody. Everything is up and running, and everyone who's non-essential is staying home. And think of the alternative. It could have been terrible if you had seawater, ocean water coming into downtown Manhattan. It could have taken out the entire power grid. Now, of course, we have data centers, backup generators in other places, but it could have been ugly.
Now, Heidi, you mentioned that the trains are not running to what you call the bedroom communities outside New York. Those are also, some of them, places like Greenwich, Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut, Jersey City. Those are financial hubs themselves, right?
That's right. They have a lot of the data centers that keep Wall Street running and a lot of the employees that keep Wall Street running. And so a lot of them could find ways to get into the office because they drive. But that's not the case for everybody. And what really helped was over-preparation by a lot of the firms. They told them, listen, if you can't come in, you can work from home. And that, of course, is completely possible. You know, for firms like JP Morgan or the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ, they all started testing their systems and bringing in generators in the middle of last week. So they never really got past the monitoring stage, but they were prepared for a 9/11 type disaster.
So it's not too difficult to work from home if you work on Wall Street.
That's right. I mean, you have to imagine it's a global world. A lot of Wall Street people are set up to work when they're traveling. So they have what they need, unless they're traders. If you're a trader, you do need to be on the trading floor. But everyone else can work remotely. They have BlackBerries and laptops.
Marketplace New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. Heidi, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, one of the hardest hit industries, Jeremy, was tourism, as beach resorts up and down the Eastern Seaboard took a big hit. It's an important time of year, as Brian Russo from Station WAMU reports.
Most coastal business owners call it the 100 days of summer. It's that time between Memorial Day and Labor Day where seasonal businesses are trying to make enough money to last the entire year. With flooding, down trees, and blackouts from North Carolina to New Jersey, Hurricane Irene has cut back that time frame as countless businesses were abruptly shut down and millions evacuated. Chuck Watson is with the research firm Kinetic Analysis.
You have maybe 12 or 15 high-paying weekends during the summer. Well, we've lost one for sure. We will probably lose Labor Day as well because cleanup will still be going on.
Damage estimates in the Carolinas alone range from $200 to $400 million. As Irene approached, 200,000 people were forced to flee Ocean City, Maryland on Friday. But in a fluke, the hurricane was much harder on resort towns to the north and south. By Sunday, Ocean City was back open for business. Danny King is the owner of Kingy's Cotton Candy on the boardwalk.
Things are basically normal. There's not water in the street. Looks to me like everything went as good as it could have.
King said crowds this Labor Day weekend could even be bigger than in years past as tourists rethink trips to areas still digging out from Irene. In Ocean City, Maryland, I'm Brian Russo for Marketplace.
All right. Well, now to the non-Irene news, Steve. President Obama is announcing this morning that his nominee to be the new head of the Council of Economic Advisors is Alan Krueger.
I was going to do a drum roll.
He is a Princeton economist known for his research on the job market, which is probably going to be quite helpful right now.
Yeah. The government said today consumer spending rose in July by 0.8%. And we got word from the National Association of Realtors that pending home sales were lower from June to July. And two of Greece's biggest banks are merging in hopes that one big bank, a huge bank, will be better prepared to withstand the European debt mess?
Well, I think probably those two Greek banks decided that they weren't quite too big to fail just by themselves. Yeah. It's probably better to be bigger these days.
This is Eurobank and Alpha Bank, by the way, in Greece.
Which are you a customer of either of those banks?
I actually have family members who work in the banking industry in Greece, but I will not disclose which
one. Well, we've got more numbers and business news anytime at our website, marketplace.org. You can also follow our show on Facebook and Twitter. We are at Marketplace Radio on Twitter.
And you can follow us individually as well. I'm at Radio Chio.
And I am at Jeremy Hobson.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, online automatic backup designed for small businesses. Carbonite Business automatically backs up files to a secure offsite location. In the event of a hard drive crash, virus, or other problem, files can easily be recovered. More information and a free trial by visiting Carbonite.com using the code Marketplace.
Oil is trading at about $85 a barrel this morning, and regular unleaded gasoline is averaging $3.61 a gallon nationwide. Now, those figures are pretty important to just about everyone with a car. They're really important to the U.S. military, which spent last year about $13 billion on fuel.
Well, in the next month or two, the U.S. Navy is going to do something about that. They are launching a new hybrid electric warship. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
Please watch your step. We got some lights out on this next couple levels here.
On board the USS Macon Island, a next-generation assault ship, they don't like to call it the USS Prius. But come on, it's a hybrid. Operations Chief Jeff Brotherton says there's gas and there's auxiliary electric.
And I start the auxiliary propulsion motor. It will cause the gas turbine to stop.
It gets 33% better nautical mileage and saves at the pump.
When we took the ship from Pascagoula, Mississippi to San Diego, we sailed around the southern tip of South America. Our savings was nearly $2 million in fuel costs.
It sips fuel at low speed, like when fighters take off from the deck or amphibious landing craft emerge from the belly. The Navy wants this hybrid ship to be part of a future greener fleet. Why? Oil prices of sailors cussing like themselves. Retired General Chuck Wald.
Back in 2008, when oil peaked out at $147.50 a barrel, that was about $11 billion extra for the U.S. military.
Which in today's budget environment will be slimming down. Analyst Larry Korb is with the Center for American Progress.
The Navy wants 313 ships. They can only afford about 280 now. So maybe if they can save some money on oil, they can buy more ships.
On the Macon Islands, sailors talk up other onboard efficiencies. Special filters turn seawater into fresh. Recycling contests give winning squads first place in the chow line.
We got turkey burgers, we got baked beans.
Today, Chef, PSSR Wright.
We got cake for dessert.
The serious part about saving oil is the less the military buys, the less it funds unfriendly places. Still, it'll take decades to undo. So the real question lies with future Pentagon brass and whether saving energy floats their boats as well. In San Diego, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And Scott is starting a series today on Marketplace with Kai Rizdahl, looking at other ways the military hopes to cut its oil demand. So tune in for that on the air or online at the Marketplace podcast.
Now, the Marketplace Global Perspective, Japan's finance minister Yoshihiko Noda was picked today to become that country's new prime minister. Well, the Japanese economy has been struggling for decades, made worse, much worse this year, by the devastating earthquake and tsunami.
But its currency has stayed strong, making Japanese products more expensive around the world. So officials want to change that by making the yen worth less. Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports now on how a country can do that.
Want to decrease the value of your currency?
Probably the single best option is to increase the money supply.
Thomas Lease is a professor at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management. The basic idea here is very Econ 101-y. If the supply of money increases, the value of that money should fall. But governments have to be careful.
While the producers benefit from a weakened currency, the consumers suffer from that.
Pumping too much money into an economy, like Japan's or America's, can cause inflation, making it more expensive to buy things. There are other challenges for governments trying to devalue their currency.
Other things are happening as well that may be increasing or decreasing the demand for your currency.
Carl Walsh is an economics professor at UC Santa Cruz.
The value of a currency can be influenced a lot about where people think it's going.
Walsh says it's about perception. When it comes to currency policy, people have to believe a government's efforts will work. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
To Switzerland now, Steve, where there is a new political party in the making, a political party with one thing in mind. Can you guess what that might be in Switzerland?
Lower taxes. let's see. Compulsory election, like participation. None of that?
No. Okay. They're really focused on banning PowerPoint presentations.
Oh, really? that's the platform.
That's the platform. That's all it is. The anti-PowerPoint party is trying to collect 10,000 signatures so that it can do away with those fancy slideshows once and for all. The founder of the party says the Microsoft program is causing the Swiss economy to lose hundreds of billions of dollars a year. I don't know where he came up with that figure.
Yeah.
But he says the reason is because these presentations are boring for workers. His solution, by the way, is old-fashioned whiteboard flip charts, which he says are much more pleasant and more interesting to watch, which, of course, you would know if you were on Marketplace.org, where our senior editor, Patty Hirsch,
he does the whiteboard.
Is all about the whiteboard.
He's an amazing whiteboard guy and an artist, a true artist.
A true artist. He may be anti-PowerPoint as well. I don't know if he's going to be running for election in Switzerland, but you should definitely check out his whiteboard videos at Marketplace.org.
Well, a type of genetically modified corn by agricultural and chemical company Monsanto may not be as resistant to the exact bug it's supposed to resist. New research out of Iowa State University says it raises concerns that biotech crops could spawn superbugs. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Troe reports.
Western corn rootworms are tough little bugs. Monsanto genetically engineered a type of corn that keeps them at bay. It's worked for more than a decade, so well that some farmers plant it year after year. You're not supposed to do that because it gives the worms time to learn how to survive. The study found that farmers who grew the Monsanto corn 3 years in a row got infested by worms that turned into superbugs.
These types of adaptations could start to reduce yield and start to cause the problems that we were looking to avoid.
Darren Newsom is senior agriculture analyst at DTN. He says corn prices are booming because of more demand to feed animals, to send overseas, and to make ethanol. It's tempting for farmers to stick with corn.
We are seeing more acres put back to back with corn because we simply need the supply of corn year in and year out.
He says any news that could lead to less corn, like a superbug, means prices will likely rise even more. Monsanto encourages farmers not to use the same type of modified corn back to back. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, Time magazine, of course, is known for its annual Person of the Year. They've been doing that for decades upon decades, right? And now the magazine is out with a title not quite as prestigious, The 10 Creepiest Product Mascots. They've really dipped into the well on this one, haven't they?
There you go, yes.
McDonald's Hamburglar made the list. As did the old, you remember Domino's pizza, the Noid?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. The Noid is too creepy.
It was kind of creepy. I sense a trend here, by the way, because you know what? We've got food companies here, right?
Are there more
junk food? Yes. Count Chocula.
Oh, no, that's not fair. Count Chocula
is
not creepy.
Count Chocula's not creepy? He's a little creepy.
All right, okay.
Frankenberry, in my opinion, is
who
a little
creepy.
Who
else you got?
We also have Time's headliner, the Burger King King, that big plastic, big-headed king. Yeah, that kind of shows up, arbitrarily around people and freaks them out. As we reported last week, Burger King got rid of that ad campaign. The king was dethroned, as it were, because customers were a little creeped out by him. So no more king in the Burger King commercials. How about that?
I don't think that's going to keep either of us away from burgers.
Burger King, yeah.
I don't know about Burger King, but burgers for sure.
We all have our
definitely
taste.
Still into it.
Absolutely.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Enjoy your Monday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.